Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast here with my co-host Benji Nyson. This show is supported by Lacole, who produced performance cycling apparel. Boy, oh boy, do we have a weird old stage to recap today at the Tour de Suisse Stage 7, the second individual time trial, a up and down ITT, 23Ks long. They do a 9.5K climb, 6.5% average gradient. It's pretty regular. And then descend the other side to Andermatt, which is like a long straight descent. And then I think 15 or so hairpins. Most of the riders opted to do it on their TT bikes. Ineos and EF did anyway. But Benji's pick on the podcast, not his main pick, let's be clear, but definitely, he said, his outsider pick to win the stage was Rigoberto Urán, the man who hasn't won a race since Tour of Slovenia Stage 3 in 2018, hasn't won a World Tour race since Tour de France 2017, is maybe one of the most defensive, boring riders in the world, although might have given the reins to Wilco Kelderman. He wins today's stage, so big props to Benji. He wasn't even the top five favourites, and he wins this by about 40 seconds on Julian Alaphilippe in a 36-minute TT. Before I do the top 10, Benji, even you didn't expect Urán to win by 40 seconds.
Yeah, of course not. Like, I had him as a rider that can definitely win this time trial because of the history that I remember with him. I recall him winning a Giro time trial, the one where Quintana crashed in 2015-16. That was what got me to say Urán yesterday, together with the descent of the Iseron that eventually got cancelled. He was also descending very strong there, very similar descent in the way it works, and that's why I went for it. And I think it paid off, I guess. I think it's probably my proudest prediction of the year so far, I'd say, because there's been a few, but like this is like out there because it's been so long and so forth. I just like seeing him win because he's such a weird guy on social media. The most popular Southern American cyclist in the world when it comes to his followers on Instagram. Actually, the most popular cyclist on Instagram when it comes to his followers.
Yeah.
The man has so much such a large following in Southern America that it's so cool to see that he's so popular and that he makes such funny jokes like the time he cut a part out of a shoe because he had a foot injury, for example, stuff like that. Nah, makes me love the guy.
Here's the top 10. Urán first on 36 minutes and 2 seconds. Alaphilippe second, 40 seconds back. He rode the whole thing on a road bike and it was definitely slower. He lost a lot on the descent to Urán. Urán was doing like 100 Ks on the descent. Gino made a third, same time as Carapaz fourth on 54, Dumoulin fifth on 56, Cataneo 58, then Pozzovivo 1 minute, same time as Costa, SKA, and Kung rounding out the top 10. My pick, my outsider for the day was Fuglsang. That was not a good pick. He didn't do well, 16th. But we did say that the one thing we said yesterday for certain was that this would be a weird TT with weird results, and that's what we have, a very mixed bag top 10. I think the big surprise, Benji, I think, is Dennis and Schachmann and Fuglsang even as well, but particularly Schachmann being beaten by, say, Stefan Kung on such a climbing heavy course. Does that surprise you?
Yeah, it certainly does. I think that Schachmann has had great time trials on rolling hills and so forth. He's been able to climb very well this Tour de Suisse also in previous climbing stages as well before in this season and previous seasons. I think that I expected much more from Schachmann. Genuinely a disappointment today. Fuglsang's a bit of an inconsistent one in time trials, but because of the climbing aspect, I was expecting a good one here, like you are mentioning. And I think that we saw that, was it Andalusia time trial last year, where he, I think, just lost to Dylan Teuns or something, or just won from Dylan Teuns? Vaguely remember something like that. That was a flat draw, definitely wasn't a mountain time trial, and this was, so I'd expect him to be better on this terrain, and he just completely fell through on the climb itself already and did worse than Schachmann on the climb itself. So yeah, very disappointing. And let's talk about Michael Woods as well. What the hell? Yeah. Like, he's such a bad time trialist. If he goes to the Tour for GC, he might as well stop already, because there's no way in hell he's staying anywhere close. I'd go for stage wins.
Yeah, his TT is really bad, losing 2.5 minutes on this TT. he's going to lose minutes and minutes hand over fist to the Slovenians and Thomas and Port and all the half-decent TT. Even Alaphilippe, he'll lose a bucket load of time. And then Alaphilippe's the guy he'll be competing against for like puncher finishes as well as the Slovenians. So GC at the Tour looking really rough for Israel Startup Nation at the moment. I think
they've got Froome, man.
Yeah, sorry, Dan Martin as well. So they've basically got, yeah, it's a weird team. Anyway, I think it was interesting to see only one rider I saw tried to change bikes. Koshta did the climb on the road bike, then changed to the TT bike. I'll just read some intermediate splits out just to – so the intermediate, quickest intermediate to T1, so the climbing section, Uran, 12 seconds ahead of Alaphilippe. So Alaphilippe did a – he's looking in great shape for the Tour climbing-wise. I mean, he did it on a road bike. He did it on his world champs road bike. Filippo Ganna dishonored. Will Alaphilippe be fined? Stay tuned for that. His second fine of the Tour de Suisse. 12 seconds after Uran, pretty good. But they did it 27 Ks an hour. So not a big – if they can get the TT bikes to 8, 7.5 kilos, maybe they can't. But TT bike seems to be better there because the, you know, the quickest time on the downhill section was Walt Poels. Actually, he did 68 Ks an hour average for 9:57. So Poels, he's just, his climbing is really bad. It seemed, well, not it seems, it was Poels climbing coming 16th on the climb. Maybe he kept it back on the descent. What about Dumoulin, Benji? He came 6th at the T1 and then 12th on the descent, 5th overall. That's got to be a pretty encouraging result for him.
I think that's an amazing time trial for him, man. I think on paper, from the climbing we've seen this Tour de Suisse, I might say that a somewhat flatter time trial might fit him even more in the longer sense. So let's look at Tokyo's time trial in our minds, and we see a parkour that's not flat, but it's also not a mountain time trial. So this is very, very promising for Tom Dumoulin in terms of that race I'm expecting.
Now, what I want to know is, and I don't know because I'm not anywhere near a pro rider and these TTs are so irregular, is Rigoberto Urán or Cataneo Posavivo, are they better climbers than Carapaz? No, they're not. But it's a 26-minute climb. How is Posavivo putting 21 seconds into Carapaz on a climb, even though it's on TT bikes? Is it down to comfort on the TT bike and their ability to put out power with a different hip angle? What is contributing to that? Is it pacing? Is Pozzovivo going harder on the climb and then he lost on the descent because he did a very, very bad descent, Pozzovivo. 10, he was 42nd on the descent section, losing 31 seconds to Uran and sort of that's how Carapaz leapfrogged him. Alaphilippe did really bad on the descent too. And if anyone says TT bike versus road bike on a descent, it seems to me, I mean, Alaphilippe, good handler. This is pretty good evidence, just without any actual statistics other than what we've seen, that the TT bikes were quicker, unless it's very, very technical. Yeah. This even had hairpins. And Uran did the descent 28 seconds quicker. So, yeah, it's food for thought. But any other interesting facts from this TT, Benji? What about Dennis' performance? Are you surprised by him?
I first want to go back to your point about why an Uran, for example, can do better on this kind of parkour. I think it's through the way that this climb is also, because this climb is a 6.5%, 9.5-kilometer climb, 6.5% steady gradient. There's no peaks to 9%. There's no peaks to 11%. There's nothing like that. There's that exact gradient that is not high enough, which means that riders like an Uran and so forth can go on to the large ring on their bike and hammer those watts purely on the large ring. And we saw Carapaz even with a larger ring than he usually does. So I'm expecting that teams were thinking about that this climb plays a role in that. And I think that, for example, a rider like Schachmann, who was playing on a much smaller ring from what we could see, well, he was pedaling much faster. That's basically the easy explanation there. And that didn't really work out for him. So it seems like it really worked on the big ring for the specialists of that big ring. Cataneo is very good at that. That's why he's good at this kind of time trial. That's why I somewhat looked at him as well today. I saw him come like 6 seconds behind Mader the second, that Mader was still in the lead. So I was like, okay, that's probably a reason for that. Mader seemed to be on a pretty big ring as well. Dumoulin's great at that. Carapaz changed towards that, like I just mentioned. So it's clear that is the big thing that everybody on top here at the front of that first intermediate chose for him. And then it's also down to your gut in the descent, because I think that Uran genuinely is more daring in descents. We've seen him done a lot of great descents in the past, and it's better in those long straight descents than the ones with shady corners and hairpins and so forth. And I think that plays a role as well here. I think if it was more technical with a road bike and so forth, then an Alaphilippe descent would probably be much closer to what Uran would perform on that type of parkour, if that makes any sense.
Rigoberto Uran can win the Mont Ventoux stage in this upcoming Tour de France if he goes for stages. It's got a long, fast descent, I believe, off the last descent of Ventoux.
You're right.
He's good enough at climbing to maybe definitely stay in a breakaway group. And if he goes for if he's staying in the GC group, maybe, but problematic.
He's going for GC.
I know he's going to go for GC, but that's probably why he doesn't win as many stages. If he could definitely, that would be a stage he could win if he wasn't a GC threat, because he needs to get away on the descent.
Yep.
I mean, if you want any further evidence that TT climbing is not the same as normal climbing, Esteban Chavez, who was flying on the climb the other day, did the climbing section 2:30, I believe, slower than Rigoberto Uran. 2:26 slower. That is insane how much slower he did. He did it slower than Fred Wright, and Fred Wright's like 25 kilos heavier than him. So
I have a question though. Like, this kind of climb, it's also, like I just mentioned, that gradient is not amazing, which means that it's also got draft benefit in normal stages, not in a time trial. Do you think that a climber like a Chavez benefits more from the draft on a road stage, but do you think that it is more troublesome for someone like Chavez to produce the same watts when not having that draft benefit compared to a rider like Uran and Carapaz that we've seen ride better when he's alone on such gradients?
Maybe, but you know, Chavez went on his own early in Catalonia. He went early the other day. He's not like a guy that sort of jumps late. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't really know why. But what we do know is that the GC is back on. It's not a formality, this Tour de Suisse, anymore. Tomorrow's stage 8, 160 kilometers long. It starts out the gate with a Cat 1, 11Ks, 5.5% descent, then the Lucmanier pass. I think the other side, I think they pretty much do this. This is the reverse direction of the stage the other day.
Yeah.
16Ks, 5.5%, long fishbowl valley, and then back up to the San Gotardo pass, 13.5Ks, 6.7%. Descent, then a flat finish. The GC is, there's not a big gap for Carapaz anymore. He keeps the leader's jersey, but Alaphilippe's going home, I believe, because his child's being born on Monday. So he's out. So GC is Carapaz 17 seconds ahead of Uran, 1:07 back to Schachmann, then Fuglsang at 1:15, then a big gap. Woods, Pozzovivo, Uman, Costa, Chavez, Cataneo, all 3 to 4 minutes back. So Uran v. Carapaz, it's really on this last stage. It would be a big scalp for Uran. Let me check his team first, just because I haven't been paying attention to them apart from Bissiger's performance. Powerless Benji, satellite rider tomorrow for Rigoberto Uran?
He should. Like, I think that Uran needs to try something. He's not necessarily the rider we've seen attack a lot in his history, but we've seen a few Uran attacks out there. I'm hoping that we see him try something, but I think that it's going to be really tough to put Carapaz in actual trouble on this parkour. There's climbs at the start, which indeed allows for satellite riders to go ahead, but they took care of that fairly easily on the stage. Was it yesterday? Yes, where Alaphilippe had that early attack and so forth. So I'd love it if Paulus does it. It would fit well.
Yeah, I think Uran needs someone to pace for him on the climbs to set something up, but I think Carapaz on a road bike, it might be difficult to shake off on a descent as well. And there's that long valley. It has to be the last climb. You can't go on the first two climbs, I don't think. It's so far from the finish.
Yeah, like but
110Ks far.
Ron doesn't have the acceleration, I think, to drop Carapaz in any way. I just don't see it happening. I hope it becomes tens at some point, but I find it very difficult to believe that we'll see a point where Carapaz is literally unable to follow an attack by Rigoberto Urán. It just doesn't make sense in my mind.
I'm trying to see how technical the descent is off the back of the
San Carapaz didn't even lose that much time in the descent today, I think. Like,
nah.
It was 53 seconds at the top and I think 50 seconds at the bottom or something.
It looks like there's about three turns in it. It looks like it's going to be difficult for Urán. But hopefully he tries, and hopefully he goes and tries on, I don't know, the San Gotardo pass, tries to bridge across to Paulus, who paces him, maybe Ineos. I mean, they've got Eddie Dunbar is pretty much the only guy that's going to be there working on the meat of that climb. So, yeah, maybe Ineos will be vulnerable, but I think it'll be tough. I think Dunbar can shut down any sort of Nielsen Paulus Urán attack without too much trouble. So Carapaz still firmly in the box seat, despite Urán giving him a big scare today and hopefully one tomorrow. But hope you enjoyed this recap. Stay tuned now if you're listening on podcast players for the Tour of Slovenia Stage 4 recap. But if you're on YouTube, give us a like down below and we'll see you with the Tour de Suisse final Stage 8 recap tomorrow. Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nyssen and Kroju, as well as Heinrich Hausmann and Aaron Brew above his right shoulder. This is the recap of the Tour of Slovenia Stage 4, finishing with the disgusting climb at Nova Gorica. I think it's called the Sveta Gorana climb or something. It's like called a holy climb. European standard. I've seen it already in Andorra. Seems to be find the most steep, crazy hill around and then just build a church on top of it. So we have that we have that here as well. 163 Ks long. It's got the Ravnica climb, which is 2.7 Ks, 11%, which is hard enough in itself. That crests 9 Ks from the finish. Then there's a rolling ridgeline short descent, then 2.4 Ks, 13.5%. Ramps up to 25-27% apparently on this final climb. They'll make it look easy, but it's not. This is really, really hard climb. Pogacar over a minute ahead of Moritz and Sobrero and GC. This was the stage we thought he'd be dominating, but there was a break, Benji, but pretty much Trentin just controlling them, right?
Yes, indeed. Trentin was in control for UAE. He was trying to keep it all relatively close so they could, well, take the stage in the end. That was their final goal here. And that became very clear because towards that Ravnica climb, the bottom of it, they indeed started controlling even more. But then another team popped up at the front. We saw that Bike Exchange was taking over on the Ravnica climb just at the starting portion. And I wasn't really sure why. They've got Tanel Kangert. They've got your boy Andrei Zaitz. So I'm not sure that's the two people I'm going to drop everything on for this stage, because you've got a competitor that has a team that, yeah, is going to beat those two riders. Like, there's no way Kangert and Zaitz are winning against Pogacar. So what do you think is their idea? Is it that to try and put pressure or try to do at least something against Pogacar here? Or, yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes in life, you just have to accept your fate and that you're going to get wrecked. And Bike Exchange didn't feel like accepting that this morning or today. But yeah, I agree with Benji. I don't have an answer. I don't have a logical explanation for you, Benji. Oh, yeah, Trentin controlling. UAE pretty much split it apart on that, the end of that Ravnica climb. We've got a group with Micah Polance, Ulisi, and Pogacar, four UAE riders, as well as Sobrero Romo, two Astana riders. Sobrero, told you already, remember that name. And then Ilmor Zakarin, Benji, the Zakarin. I was like, he's back. He's going to destroy Pogacar on this final climb. That didn't end up happening. It was pretty much UAE just controlling and pacing. James Shaw was there too for Ribble. And the commentators let us know almost to the point that it was a meme how well he was doing, but he is doing really well. We said that the other day. But yeah, pretty much Micah then taking over pacing at the bottom of that climb. And the question was, is Pogacar going to go full gas on this climb, or are UAE going to try and gift this stage to someone? He's already won a stage on stage two. He hadn't won a stage of Tour of Slovenia before. And so he's got that ticked, and he's going to win GC. So is he going to gift it to Micah or Ulisi? Well, the answer became pretty clear when Micah pacing drops everyone except Sobrero, Ulisi, and Pogacar. Then Pogacar gets flicked with about 800 meters to go. He starts pacing. Ulysses was their third wheel. They moved Sobrero second wheel. Then Sobrero, I think, gets caught by surprise when Ulysses hits him with about 150 meters to go and attacks really, really hard. Sobrero can't get back onto his wheel. There's a big sweeping right-hand bend. And Pogacar gets onto Sobrero's wheel, but Ulysses is already gone. Wins the stage, and Pogacar actually comes around to take second for the UAE 1-2. So it's been a quick recap because it was a pretty straightforward stage. My main questions for Benji is that merits further discussion is, do you like the way UAE and Pogacar in particular set this stage up and gifted it to he gifted it to Ulysses. Pogacar could have won the stage.
Yeah, easily. He was going over the line celebrating. He looked like he easily passed Sobrero there in the last section. So he could have easily won the stage in that sprint as well, most likely. I wouldn't even be in doubt that that sprint could have been won by Pogacar if he was sprinting against Ulysses there, because he went over Sobrero that easily. But obviously, if he went earlier, he also would have likely won the stage that way. So if Pogacar wanted, the stage was easily for him, but he decided not to. He decided that it was for Ulysses to try. And I'm pretty positive about that. I think that not all reactions are going to be, oh, wow, awesome. I'm pretty happy about that, because you've got Pogacar, who has a team that has to work for him the entire season, being able to give back to the team that is working for him the entire season in a race that on paper matters less for UAE. It is also a team sport, and does gifting to a teammate is certainly something that I do accept in this sport personally.
Thing is, I mean, Mike is the guy that's going to be pulling in about 3 weeks on stage 8 in the Tour de France, not Ulysses. I think what I'd like to see is, and yeah, you know, I don't mind. I would have liked, obviously, as a spectator and the people on top of the climb that waited there, they would have loved to have seen Pogacar go full gas or win the stage, or at least, you know, to open up the legs in the last K. But of course, he's under no obligation to do that. He's here as a tune-up race. He's won a stage, which he probably didn't expect to win the stage two, and he's going to win GC. He doesn't need to win half the stages here, and you'll see he was probably expected to win stage two rather than stage four. So they've kind of swapped it around. You know, even if Pogacar had gone full gas, would I then say, oh, well, he's definitely going to win the Tour de France now? I mean, it's hard to know his level or condition. It's not like they don't have a 40-minute climb here in this race anyway. I think what's interesting, Benji, I want to talk about Diego Ulysses. Very sort of unique style rider. His climbing seems to be getting better and better. 31 years old. He's only done one Vuelta. Pogacar says he wants to take a tilt at the Vuelta. Roglic, I don't think, is going. Surely, no, given how Ulysses went. Oh, he is?
It depends. If he loses the Tour, he's gonna go to the Vuelta.
Okay, that's true. Benji's right. That's sort of what happened last year. Given how Ulysses went on this Rampas Inhumanas, surely he can be helpful to Pogacar at the Vuelta and even go for stages himself.
Certainly, I'm always surprised that Ulysses has only done one Vuelta in his past.
Yeah, I know.
And it's a bit like the Colbrelli story we had a few weeks ago.
Exactly.
Where these riders fit the Vuelta so much, but because they're Italian, they're focusing so much on the Giro when they're going there instead. So it's just a thing that happens. And I believe that Ulysses should go to the Vuelta. I believe that he can get stage wins there definitely. And a lot of these steep finish, climby Rampas Inhumanas, the way you're calling it, those are fitting for him. Those are fitting for a lot of riders, but he's definitely one of the better ones at it. So I think it's perfect for him. And I think that he should definitely be there. Do I like these kind of finishes? It depends, because sometimes I feel like it's kind of like a sprint stage. You've got an entire stage where nothing happens, and then the last 2 kilometers is the action, which I don't mind if the 2 kilometers of action is amazing. But sometimes it can disappoint, and that's why I'm like, oh, I'd like to see a bit more multiple hills following each other up and stuff like that in stages than just one La Camperona, for example, at the end of a stage.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was sort of thinking, this stage is going to be crazy. I mean, it's not. And even in the Vuelta, like the one Valverde Roglic in 2019, the one Valverde won, like it's generally pretty small gaps because, yeah, unless you – even Puy-Marie, that was pretty big gaps actually for that sort of climb. Like Bernal lost 30 seconds, but he was actually a bit unwell. But even when the Slovenians went absolutely full, I think the reason Ulysses hasn't done the Vuelta many times is he generally does sort of the Tre Valle Varesine, Lombardia, Giro d'Emilia, Memorial Marco Pantani route because he's Italian, as Benji said. But it depends what the sponsors want. I mean, I still think of Vuelta stage is nothing to turn your nose up at and is more important definitely than Memorial Marco Pantani, and particularly if he can also, well, if he can, I think he definitely can be helpful to Pogacar given the sort of climbs they have in the Vuelta. So, yeah, I think you'll see at the Vuelta, I'd love to see repaying Pogacar back for today. But tomorrow's stage in Slovenia, sprint stage, Ljubljana, Novo Mesto, 175Ks long. We've got a few more climbs than in stage one, but the longest ones in the first 20Ks, 7Ks, 4%. And then the last couple aren't even categorized with like 26Ks to go. It's between Bauhaus and Aberastri for me, Benji. And Aberastri is looking really, really good.
Yeah, that's true. That's
slide
very, very
true. Slide uphill drag as well at the end, like false slide uphill.
I'd love to see Aberastri do well because I kind of enjoy the guy. But Bauhaus is so powerful and has such a good lead out, though. That's what makes him strong. And he's also decent on a bit of an uphill drag. So I think they could both work on this type of finish. They were so close on stage one. It could be just as close on this stage. Are there other people that we could look at, for example, for this stage? It's a bit difficult. I think Alan Banaschek sprinted pretty well from Azovshe last time around in stage one. I think that outside of the two we mentioned, I don't instantly see someone else. I think an uphill drag fits Trentin more than a non-uphill drag, but I don't think it's uphill drag enough for him, you know?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think Bauhaus is still the favorite. But, well, who knows? He didn't win very convincingly on stage one, but he still got it done. I'll be interested to see how it goes. Maybe Bahrain try something with a reverse lead out. I mean, Trutnik, Moric looking very, very strong, but
Hausler, man.
Yeah, let Hausler go. Hey, Flam Rouge, come on. Let Hausler have a little go. Let him have a dig. Yeah, come on. Dot pro race, he can win it. I mean, the other lead outs. Yeah.
Talking about Mohoric, we forgot to mention today that he attacked. He attacked on the descent part between the two sections, the two last hills. And I found that pretty funny. Like, Mohoric can just ride a random road. He finds 10 meters of descent, then he attacks the group that he's in.
It seems like I remember with the Supertuck ban, it came out and people asked him because he's like a big, he used it a lot. And he's like, doesn't matter for me. I'll still, don't really care. And it's true. He's been able to, what was the descent? What was the race he just did? Oh, Giro. There was a descent he did at the Giro. I can't remember what stage it was. But he, I'm pretty sure, oh no, maybe it was on another
Catalunya,
stage.
Last stage, Thomas de Gent.
No. I've gone full 5,000 IQ, Benji. I'm actually thinking of the race he's currently doing. I'm thinking of stage two of Slovenia, where there was no TV footage of his descent of the last climb, the main descent of the Sfatina, and he caught Sobrera. He would have been absolutely flying, but we didn't see it. And I wonder how many descents in Moritz's career has he had where it's like, if you had a motorbike behind him, or if he had a GoPro on, it's this type of footage that, you know, get a million views on YouTube. It's like the most insane, beautiful thing you've ever seen. And it's just, you never see it because he's normally chasing. Remember Liège last year? Same thing. I bet you his Liège descent was absolutely obscene. But
we should invest. We should invest money in one of those like racing drone drivers or whatever you call that, racing drone pilots.
It just follows him.
And just follow him the moment that he goes into the descents in Grand Tours or wherever he's at.
Listen, Velon and Bahrain, I'll pay €1,000. Even I'll pay for the GoPro, both the two GoPros, the best quality ones. I'll put them on Moritz's bike. It should still be 6.8 kilos if I can get the footage as well, because I want that for every race. But that's enough from Tour of Slovenia. Enjoying it so far. You'll see winning today. He keeps winning every year, and we'll see you with the recap of the sprint tomorrow. Ciao.